another episode of Talking Success, connecting the global fintech community. I'm Stacey Jafta, and today I'll be talking with Brett Dyson, CEO and co-founder of Hepstar. Hepstar provides global supply and merchandising for travel ancillaries to OTAs, travel tech companies, and airlines through their B2B-based API technology. Hi, Brett. Thanks for joining me on the podcast. How are you doing?
Hi, Stacey. Thanks. Thank you for having me. All good on this side.
How's your day been? How's the last couple of months been?
It's been interesting. I think today has been, you know, quite a nice day, funny enough. I haven't had as many calls as what I'm typically having now during this period. So it's been sort of a mix between getting in a nice walk this morning, a couple of team calls, and then some calls with some of our partners. But in general, it has been sort of an interesting process. With COVID obviously taking a very strong effect over the last month or two, we definitely are experiencing far more calls than what we used to.
Really? Calls internally amongst the team or with potential and current clients?
It's a combination of both. You know, with clients and prospecting, we're seeing maybe a 30 to 40% increase in calls on our existing customer base, and then also partners looking to really expand their ancillary horizon or increase their recovery transition period. And then internally, of course, not having those daily stand-ups with the team, managing the team on a daily basis and weekly basis has been a little bit more difficult. So we've just ensured that we have clear communication lines and we check in on a consistent basis.
Can you give a quick rundown of Hepstar and your target audience?
So Hepstar is an API-based B2B technology company that's based in Cape Town. It's our HQ. Where our engineers, data scientists, and product managers are. We also have a subsidiary in Istanbul. And we pretty much play in the travel landscape, well, online travel landscape. So as you can imagine, the business is a bit difficult at this stage. The calls are to a large degree making sure that our customers, partners, and the team members or stakeholders that we have relationships with are okay, are healthy. Their families are okay. We've taken a very passive approach to implementing new projects or even from the prospecting side. For us, we wouldn't want to be too aggressive from that perspective. Some companies are just trying to survive during this process. So where our partners do want to move forward on a different implementation or project, we engage with them. If not, we're really waiting until, you know, the dust settles with COVID to continue those conversations. But back to the original question, we bridge insurtech and travel tech in the landscape. So we've got an insurance flavor. We ultimately, you could consider us like a middleware. So we aggregate content from a range of global suppliers. And this is both travel insurance and there could be other travel ancillary products, which we refer to as travel extras. So we've got partners like AXA, Chubb, Ergo, Cornerstone in Nigeria. Just really, it's across the board globally. And then we also offer products like the Entertainer based on your travel duration, global Wi-Fi, eSIM, and so forth. That's the one aspect, aggregating content and making it available through our partners in their online environments through a single integration. And then the second, and that's not really rocket science, to be honest, it just takes time and you need credibility. The second aspect is we optimize the content that we serve our partners. So we've got a data analytics and optimization team. So we look at increasing the average revenue per booking in real time based on the various tools that we've got in our platform, which would range from multivariate testing to traffic splitting, our own in-house recommendation engine, triggers, and their range of other features as well. So in a nutshell, that's what we do. We've seen some wonderful traction, or I would say pre-COVID, we were seeing some amazing traction and growth. Of course, anyone in the travel landscape now, and I think potentially other verticals, is either seeing no sales or they're starting to see a downturn with the global economy obviously moving into some form of recession during this process.
Before we get into it, let's jump to the beginning. I want to know your journey as a person and how you came about the idea of building Hepstar.
So I'm not your typical tech guy, to be very honest. When I started, if you start from university or graduation, I graduated at a university called Nelson Mandela Metropolitan University in Port Elizabeth. I studied commerce, majoring in accounting and economics. I then did my honors in accounting. And I went the route of doing my articles. So I qualified as a chartered accountant and at the same time did the process of doing my CFA levels. And I qualified as a chartered financial analyst. I always thought I'd be an investment banker, to be honest, in New York. That was the plan. To be very honest, I think the intensity, I think the challenges, I think the money, I think the lifestyle. There were a lot of things that interested me. Also being someone that's fairly analytical, I thought it would be something that I would excel in. Funny enough, during my articles, I actually started investing in stocks and I made some good money in standard equity stocks and then also using CFDs. But after doing CFA, it taught me a big lesson about life. Invest in things that you understand and you specialize in. If you don't, you're gambling. So to a large degree, I was gambling. I wasn't investing enough time in the stocks. I was using my gut. I was lucky. I would absolutely put it down to that. And that's kind of where I got that thought process that investment banking was for me. I then met my partner who lived in Cape Town at the Nine and a Half Marathon. And I decided to move to Cape Town and really put that on hold to see where that journey would go. And I finished my articles at an audit firm in Cape Town and then joined an asset manager. I didn't enjoy asset management. I know a lot of people do. I just didn't see the value in me doing it in the long term in terms of their processes and what the ultimate goal was. And then I got approached by our angel investor, Stefan Ekberg, who's invested in a range of global tech companies, to join and co-found Hepstar. And it's been 6 years. I haven't looked back. I think startups are challenging. Nothing is a given. There's risk. It's something that I really had to overcome coming from a very risk adverse background, being CFA and CA, or more so CA. And you have to be comfortable with that there's no guarantee of tomorrow or a job in 6 months. So it took me a bit of time to really deal with my emotions because it can be fairly challenging and it's not for everyone. But at the same time, it's been an unbelievably fulfilling journey. And I would not take away any of my experiences, the good and the bad. I'm pretty much in tech for life now.
You've mentioned here and there that there have been some highs and lows in your experience as an entrepreneur. What exactly were those?
I think the big thing, especially when you've got a VC who's invested in your company, which we do, Amadeus Capital Partners, is that you will be challenged. And also from our angel investor, who's really a visionary in his world, is the product market fit question, which is something we got challenged with often, in the first couple of years. You know, are we creating a product that can scale? Are we creating a product that ultimately provides value to the end customer? I remember looking back, going into so many board meetings and coming out and just wanting to cry because you were just so sad and angry and upset. But you had to hear the things that the investors had to say because ultimately it was in your interest as well. And the big turning point for us was, about two and a half years ago, where those board meetings started becoming different. We started seeing the product fit in our landscape or ecosystem, and it really started changing our world. But to be very honest, I mean, I don't get nightmares about it. When I look back at that process and what we went through, I can only be thankful because I've earned my stripes. I know what product market fit means. And it doesn't mean that if you don't have product market fit, that you don't have a good product. Let me also just reiterate that it just means your ability to scale is different.
Can you elaborate a little bit more on the ability to scale?
So an example, if you've got a very complicated product that is not self-sustaining on a technology basis, so in other words, the technology doesn't work on its own, it requires people to constantly maintain it or make tweaks in order to actually fulfill the services that you offer, that's an example of potentially a product that could be great. It's almost a mixture of tech and maybe, you know, consulting or something to that degree versus a product which is a standalone that you can scale in any market or country. It's a plug-in to a large degree. And that's the difference between the two. You can still run an amazing business with a product that maybe can't scale on a global basis. It doesn't mean you're not successful. It just means that you haven't found that product market fit within your ecosystem, and the competition will be strong. So your value proposition will ultimately come down to price points and the quality of the service that you offer outside of the tech. So that's maybe something just to bear in mind for the guys out there that are maybe going through the same struggle that we did, you know, when we raised that question. And again, if you don't have product market fit, it doesn't mean you have a bad product. It just means that you've got a different journey.
Was that moment on paper? Was it in a meeting and you came together and you were like, yes, we got it? Or did you release it to the market and you saw it before your eyes?
It was in a board meeting and you know, it's more so, I guess the board meeting is the end result. It was a couple of things. The value proposition changed. We changed some of the tech. We introduced new product verticals into the platform to increase the return on investment that our partners get. The tech is completely self-fulfilling, you know, from that perspective. We do have an optimization team, you know, from a revenue management perspective. So we do have some form of consulting in our business. But the traction we're getting from the markets and the players that want to work with us really led to that point where we said, you know, we've got this. We've got a business here and we can make it global the way that we've built out the platform.
Nice. Your product is heavily intertwined with the travel industry. How has your product been impacted by COVID-19 and has there been a need to pivot?
We're very fortunate in the sense that we believe the products we offer will be just as applicable, you know, pre and post COVID. You know, some of the examples I mentioned before being, you know, travel insurance, the entertainer, global Wi-Fi, eSIM, physical SIM. We don't think that's going to change. We play in the online e-commerce environments as well. So we believe during the COVID process, we'll probably see big customer segmentations and demographics, which were more traditional purchasing customers moving to a more online environment. So the adoption of online channels, I think, will increase dramatically because once that customer base shifts, they never go back. I mean, if you think about those old Nokia phones we all had, I don't know, maybe 10 or 15 years ago, if you walked up to someone now and said, would you like a Nokia phone or would you like the latest, you know, Apple or Samsung? I guarantee you that 99% of people are going to choose the Apple or Samsung. You're going to get the 1% who says, you know, actually, maybe that Nokia was amazing.
Unless you want the brick, the one that can fall and never break.
Exactly. So we've been very fortunate. For us, it's more about timing. So making sure that we've got the right structures in place from a cash flow perspective, which is extremely important. Right now, cash is king for everyone. So, you know, managing your supplier relationships, our distributors, making sure we're managing our costs very carefully. At the same time, being very transparent to our employees. They're part of our family. They're on this journey just as much as we are. In saying that, we are looking at potential product adaptions, which take COVID-19 into account. So we're talking to some of our insurance partners to understand, you know, what would be feasible. You know, could there be a pandemic cover? Would that be an upsell or cross-sell? Of course, adding that type of cover would add a significant expense to the product. So that is something that we're looking at. In terms of pivoting, we won't be pivoting. At this stage, it's not on our roadmap. We firmly believe that travel will recover. It will just take time. So for us, it's about making sure that we've got the right infrastructure in place. We push the projects that we need to, the integrations with partners, the feature development, really the pain points that will make our life a lot easier when we come out of this. That's the big focus. So something we generally live by is the hours rule. So how many hours a month are getting wasted in our development team or product or data because they have to do a manual process, or they're getting, you know, instructions from customer support or finance. So we're dealing with a couple of those issues to make everyone's life easier and really our ability to scale a lot quicker. If I was in a traditional, more traditional landscape, and I'll use an example, if I've got a bricks and mortar retailer right now, I would be strongly considering what my strategy is to go digital. Because again, once that customer base has shifted, they don't go back. So I would be looking at, you know, am I going to be deploying an online store? How am I going to be dealing with the marketing? Do I have the skill sets to do any of this? If I don't, I may need to consider bringing them in, perhaps closing down one or two stores in terms of footprint. It may not be necessary if you get the traction online. But I mean, these are all questions I would be asking myself right now. And it's not just retailers, it's insurers, it's banking, it's across the board. I think if there's one thing we've seen during this process is that a lot of financial institutions maybe weren't ready for this. You know, from working remotely to offering products online, and you know, anything online is about convenience. It's about making the end customer's journey easier. Because right now we live in a world with really difficult customers who expect an amazing UX experience and click of a button. You know, so I think it has raised a couple of interesting discussions internally, I imagine, at some of those bigger financial services companies.
Touching on remote teams, I know that you have quite a few different teams around the globe. Do you have any tips for those that this may be their first time having to work from home and keep communication with teams that are in different locations? Are there any cool tools you use or systems?
So we currently use MS Teams, which has been working okay. I think any virtual call has got its limitations, and we all need to be aware of that. I mean, there's so much content or videos going around of, you know, those cases where I try and talk, then Stacey tries to talk, and then there's a pause, you know, around 10 or 15 minutes of an hour meeting, maybe, you know, lost because you're asking people to repeat what they said, or, you know, maybe someone didn't get an opportunity to say what they wanted to say. So I think a lot can potentially get lost in translation. I think with these type of meetings, and especially when you've got a range of stakeholders in. So I would just like to remind everyone that it is a really stressful time, you know, from a personal and business perspective. We know that virtual calls are problematic, but also remember your employees are now working in also a very different environment that they're not used to, which could be very stressful. You know, for instance, staff with families or different difficult conditions at home. We all need to take this into account and have patience with each other, show respect and kindness. It's something that internally we remind everyone when we have our bi-weekly meetings, that remember we're all human beings and we're going through this together, and it's not an easy time. Typically what we do in terms of communication in the team, because we firmly believe in our team and what I refer to as our Hepstar family, is that we keep the communication very transparent in terms of, you know, how we've approached this. Yes, we're very lucky in the sense we haven't had to do retrenchments, but we have done a form of cost cutting on salaries. And how we went about this is we actually gave all our employees two options. Option one was we have to look at redundancy and retrenchments, but we didn't mention names or departments. And the second was, well, look, we'll do salary reductions on this scale, starting with executive management taking the biggest hit, working its way down to less senior staff, but on a sliding scale that made sense for everyone to ensure everyone still earned money and could make a living. It was overwhelmingly positive. You know, everyone barring, you know, one or two people went with option two. And for me, this was extremely important because we're in this together. It's a group decision. You know, it's going to be a journey. This is not a 2 or 3 week, you know, impact. It's potentially months, 6 to 12 months. So getting everyone's buy-in and letting them feel empowered was one of the most important things for the executive team. And we're fortunate that everyone is on the same page. Of course, with the reduction in salaries, we've deployed, you know, 4 day weeks or 4.5 day weeks to ensure that it's equitable across everyone. Another example of what we're doing is each of the team leads has daily check-ins with their team. And this is from not only a work perspective, but personal. You know, what do we want to get done today? How are you doing? How are things at home? Are you okay? Have you got any problems? And then ultimately that's fed back into the executive team. The executive team has at least weekly calls with the leads. We obviously have a lot of different, let's call it, stand-up meetings across the different departments. And again, it's a time for the team leads to really tell us what they want to tell us. It's not about me or the other executives, it's about them. It's a chance for them to really let off some steam, because again, everyone needs to remember this can be absolutely frustrating for employees where you're not able to work at the productivity that you used to. So if on a scale of 1 to 10, you know, when you're normally in an environment that you used to, so the people that are not used to remote working, maybe you're working at 10. In a remote environment, you may be working at 7 to 8 effectively. So things take longer, you know, people get frustrated, and that really needs to be managed. Our product team is being really, really strong. Our development team has been doing okay, but they're situations that unfortunately are a bit more difficult within that environment. You know, so I would say definitely product. Our finance team's been a bit interesting because working remotely, you know, having local server, it's a different way of working. Also with finance, it's far easier to sit and explain something to someone using hand movements and gestures and really talking them through something. Exactly. Versus, you know, having a remote call, sharing a screen, the screen's sharing doesn't work. Then you have to try and change the sheets. It becomes quite interesting from time to time. But we have seen some really positive movements. Our customer service has been really amazing during this period as well. A lot of stress on them, you know, with a lot of, you know, claims and customer queries coming through because of COVID. So overall, I think we've managed it really well. But at the same time, we've got some really great team leads. And I think the executive team has done a fantastic job as well. You know, from the outset for us, it was about two things. You know, it was about our people And then it was about our partners. Those were the two key things outside of cash flows. The last thing I would just mention, yeah, and maybe something other companies can look at deploying, just to ease the mood and allow employees to remember why they love working where they do and why they love working with their fellow employees, is that we got two of our, what we refer to as spirit warriors, to come up with some digital social events to really, you know, ease the mood and make it less stressful for everyone. So this is something we started, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago, and it's been absolutely helpful. Of course, it's not mandatory to everyone. The staff can opt in if they want to. And some of the activities that we do, so the last 2 weeks we've done online bingo with the team. You can change your background, you can wear a hat, you can do what you want, you can have a drink, have a coffee. It's been really fun. And then we're also planning on doing online cooking classes. So
we actually did a cooking class with our team. One of my coworkers, her husband, is an executive chef, and he taught us how to make the perfect steak, and we loved it. It was so much fun, and we were laughing, and we actually learned something from it. So yeah, it's a great idea.
Yeah, we don't have any chefs yet, but we could have some. But we're planning on letting one of the employees to take the cooking class. So they'll give ultimately everyone else the opportunity to watch, get the recipe, and really make it as interactive as possible. So that's something on the cards. And then we're also looking at online yoga. So one of our team members taking a class. It definitely won't be me. I'm not the most flexible person, and I consider myself very much at the beginner stage. Outside of that, we do ad hoc challenges. So we ask everyone to take a photo when they're taking out the bins, or take a photo with your pets, or with your family. And then we put it together and then send a collage to everyone. Exactly. So I guess those are some of the things other companies can try. For us, it's working well. But again, I think we're fortunate. We've got a great team.
We spoke earlier about how you have teams all over the world. How are they divided? Are they divided by department, or are the teams mixed and matched?
So we've got two entities, the ones in Cape Town and the others in Istanbul, Turkey. So our engineering and product and analytics team and back office staff are all in Cape Town. Then in Istanbul, we've got an operations team, which really is our foot into Europe. Our chief sales officer is in Lisbon, and then one of our sales managers in Bermuda. I think we're very fortunate in the sense that we can work remotely. In terms of our tech, everything's cloud hosted. It's fairly easy to manage. Yes, has it got challenges? Absolutely. Can you read someone the wrong way? Absolutely. It's about dealing with it and being honest and transparent. So if I've said something funny to someone, afterwards they drop me a little MS Teams. What did you mean by this? And then we have a little chat and we iron it out. But we're very lucky in the sense that we do consider ourselves truly a global tech company. We employ people that are across global markets. So our head of analytics is from Netherlands. Some of our developers are from Nigeria. We've got staff from Zimbabwe. You know, we're very open to a multicultural environment. I think it's really important to have, you know, different cultures in an office environment so that you can learn and grow as a person.
Where do you get more of your inspiration from? This can be a mentor, books.
I generally read nonfiction books. I'm not much of a fiction person, unfortunately. I think it's a great base to learn from some of the greatest entrepreneurs in the world. But I would suggest you really take the good, throw out the bad, and do it your way. Some books I would really recommend are Ben Horowitz, The Hard Thing About the Hard Things, Peter Thiel's 0 to 1, and then pretty much any book on Elon Musk is fascinating. I learn more from the books than draw inspiration, to be honest. My inspiration is drawn from my mentors who are really close to me. As an entrepreneur, you can often live a lonely life carrying the concerns and challenges of your business on your shoulders alone to a large degree. You can't share this with your employees. It would be too unsettling, you know. And also, almost 90% of the time, you know, these thoughts and emotions are really unfounded. They can create panic. But it is important to share these thoughts and emotions with mentors or people close to you. I'm very fortunate that I've got some great mentors and close friends that I rely on, starting from our investors, Stefan Ekberg and Andrea Travistone, to my co-founder, Heinrich Brandt, who's an absolute stone and rock in our business. And then close friends of mine in tech as well, Sean Martin and Lasse Winter. It's good, I believe, to have a variety of mentors that you can reach out to for different purposes and really let off that steam. However, if I had to choose someone, it would be my sister. She's an unbelievably smart person, a director at an investment bank in London, has two little gorgeous ones that absolutely adore her. And she manages to juggle everything. I'm not really sure how she does it, but I'm truly amazed to this day. And the thing that I really love about her and what she gives me, and she gives me a lot, is she really understands me. And she always gives me the advice that I don't want to hear, but I need to hear. And family does do that. And, you know, I'm very lucky in the sense that, you know, Heinrich and my close friends also do that to me. We've got a very honest, genuine connection where, you know, rather be honest than float around the boat, really. And I think that's really important to have that person in your people in your life where you know they've got your best interests at heart and they're not scared to tell you the hard things because they know it's in your benefit.
Well, thanks so much, Brett, for being on the show. I loved having you. Where can those find you on social media? Where's the best place to reach you at? What's your handle?
So you can find me on LinkedIn. It's Brett Dyson. And then I'm on Instagram, but it's more privately at this stage. So if you do want to reach out to me, you can hit me up on LinkedIn, Brett Dyson. You're welcome to send a message.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining me.
Only a pleasure, Stacey. All the best on your side. And hopefully the recovery happens sooner rather than later.
Of course. Thank you for listening to Talking Success, connecting the global fintech community. Feel free to follow us on Instagram at Talent in the Cloud. And if you're interested in exec talent or you yourself are looking for a new exciting change in your career, check out our website, talentinthecloud.io.